Chapter 3. Malakhurst.
Sire? Can you hear my voice?
Malakhurst knelt beneath the throne at the War Master's feet. His features were a pale sketch in the shadowed collar of his armour. The lights of warships glimmered behind the viewport, brighter than the distant stars.
Sire,
he said again, and the word seemed to drain to silence as it left his lips. The wound in the War Master's side had opened again. Blood dripped from the maw of torn flesh, its slow inhalations sucking the sound from the air as it breathed. Patterns covered the floor around Malakhurst, drawn in ash, salt, and blood. Candles burned in stands made from dried human hands and polished skulls. He held a dagger in his left hand, the blade red from the cut it had made in the bare flesh of his right palm. Blood dripped slowly from his fingers. He had been kneeling before the throne for 6 hours, speaking words, calling up every scrap of power that he had stolen from the warp in the last years, searching for a way to coax even the smallest reaction from Horus. None of it had worked. Occult formulae had drained to nothing, and his calls to the cardinal powers and principles of the warp had been met with silence. It was as though Horus sat at the centre of a vortex, a silent storm that swallowed all strength around it. He had been this way for the last weeks, not moving from his throne, rising to brief moments of lucidity, only to lapse back into a silent fugue.
Very well,
he said, shaking his head to himself, feeling fatigue shake down his nerves.
Very well.
He drew and let out a breath. He was out of time. Even with all the power at his command, the ability to continue without sleep, and a will that could crush iron, he could not outrun the flow of time. A web of control, of power and responsibility waited for him as soon as he stepped from the throne room. At this moment, every finely balanced thread of decision and consequence led to him. It was strange, he thought. So many amongst the Legion and beyond thought of him as a manipulator, as a creature who hoarded and wielded power. And now the power was his, pressing down on him with all its weight, tangling him in its strangling threads. Those who called him the Twisted would have thought this circumstance one he would relish. He bent to clear the ritual equipment and felt exhaustion rise through him in a fever wave. Bubbles of colour spun and popped at the edge of his vision. He breathed hard. For all of the strength gifted to him by his gene-crafted body, he could not shake the weariness draining him. It was not natural, he knew that, just as the sleep that overpowered him and the dreams it brought were not natural. The remains of his arcane work gone, he picked up his scepter of authority, bowed to the immobile form of Horus, and hobbled to the side door. Kyber and four of the Justerin were waiting. Malakhurst answered Kyber's question before it was asked.
Just as before.
Kyber nodded, and the black-armoured Terminators passed into the throne room to stand guard over their silent lord. Kyber paused as he passed Malakhurst.
How long can this go on?
Malakhurst met his gaze. He wondered if the exhaustion showed in his face. He tried to think of a careful answer, but none came.
I do not know,
he said. Kyber held his gaze for a long moment, then turned away and went into the throne room. Malakhurst walked alone to his own chambers. He used side passages and sealed tunnels, careful to avoid the areas where the petitioners gathered to plead their cases to the War Master or offer gifts. Horus rarely received any but the most exalted of his subjects. Malakhurst usually sat in his place. He had kept to that duty in the last weeks. It was vital that no one noticed the slightest pause in the turning of the wheels of power. But Lorgar, why was he here? He was a Primarch, and all of Malachurst's subtlety would not be able to persuade him that everything was well indefinitely. Lorgar knew that something was wrong with Horus. He had practically said that he knew when he had arrived. Malachurst wondered which demon had whispered what to the Lord of the Word-Bearers, then dismissed the thought. It was irrelevant. He needed to rouse Horus. He needed to understand what malady had fallen on the Warmaster. He needed to...
Well met!
The voice rumbled from the shadows ahead of him. Malachurst's gaze snapped up. He reached for the bolt pistol at his waist, even as he cursed himself for allowing his fatigue to blind him to danger.
There is no need for that, said Zadu Lyak, as he stepped into view. After all, are we not brothers?
The darkness peeled back from the word-bearer, like smoke blown by a wind. Lyak's two silent bodyguards stood astride behind their master, their hands hanging loosely at their sides. Malachurst felt his skin prickle inside his armour as he looked at the blank eyepieces of their helms. Lyak stopped an arm's length from Malachurst. The two held each other's gaze, the hunched equerry in storm sea green with the eye of Horus capping the sceptre in his hand, the word-bearer in grey, his staff a broken moon clutching a bronze censer. The rows of eyes set in Lyak's horned mask helm glowed like coals. Malachurst felt the anger flare brighter in him, blurring with his fatigue. He should be silent. He should bite his tongue.
You are the guest of the Warmaster, said Malachurst,
his voice slow.
But if you do that again, I will cut your heart out and throw you into the void with it in your mouth.
One of Lyak's twin guards turned its head to stare at Malachurst. Lyak did not move for a second, then tilted his head to the side like a bird watching a snake.
It's never far beneath the skin with your breed, is it? The ghost of Chthonia, waiting to repay words with blood.
I knew Lorgar's previous favourites,
Malachurst smiled.
Ask them.
Erebus's error is not one I shall repeat, said Lyak.
Malachurst kept himself perfectly still. He was being played with, he knew. He did not know why, but whatever game this was, he had lost the opening move.
Return to your quarters,
he said with careful control, and stepped forwards to walk through the space occupied by Lyak and his two companions. For a second, he thought Lyak would stand his ground, but then the word-bearers stepped aside. Malachurst moved past them.
I can help you,
said Lyak from behind him. Malachurst kept moving. The ploy was obvious now. Lyak had been sent by Lorgar to learn what he could about what had happened to Horus. The word-bearer had provoked him to anger, destabilizing his thoughts, making him less cautious, more vulnerable to the true thrust of his purpose. Malachurst almost smiled at its crudity and kept walking. The ploy had almost worked. He was too tired by far.
I can help the Warmaster. I know what malady holds him silent on his throne.
Malachurst stopped.
I should not listen,
he thought. Never trust. Never. Always see the knives in the shadows, the murder in a smile. But. He turned slowly and looked at Lyak.
That is why Lord Aurelian is here. Why I am here. We know.
There is nothing to know,
said Malachurst. No one can hear us, Malachurst. Be not afraid. This is a matter between us alone. We can help.
If what you say is true, then Lorgar would have made this supposition directly on his arrival.
Trust, said Lyak. He wished to see if you trusted him.
I trust no one.
Then you are wise. Malachurst remained silent. He thought of Erebus, the disgraced high chaplain of the word-bearers, of the Davanites and the law they wielded, and that he had taken from them. He was at the edge of his ability and knowledge. and could see nothing beyond.
"Tell me what you know," he said.
Lyak.
"This is not sanctioned, Malaghurst,"
boomed Falcus Kyber, as he stepped from the shadows pooling beside the door to Horus's throne room. Malaghurst turned as hulking figures stepped into sight with a buzzing growl of activating armor. Lyak hissed a syllable of power under his breath. Coiling darkness enveloped him. Beside him, Kulnar and Hebek gripped the hilts of their sheathed swords. Cracks spidered across their gauntlets, and red fire glowed from beneath. Only Lorgar did not react. The Primarch remained still, looking up at the doors to the throne room, his face impassive.
"You shall not pass,"
growled Kyber as he stamped forwards. Mirror coins rattled on the plates of his black Terminator armor. 5 Justeran Terminators came with him, eyes red in blank helms. More came from the dark behind them. They had deactivated their armor and stood as silent as statues in the gloom. Lyak's sight pulsed and spun with runes as his helm struggled to grasp the aura of their souls. He should have sensed the presence of the Terminators, but he had not. The closer they had come to the throne room, the less Lyak had been able to sense in the sea of souls. The whispers of the lesser demons bound to his will had quieted in his mind, and even his blade slaves had advanced reluctantly. It was as though a storm waited beyond the doors, a storm of such force that its winds stole all sound around it.
"Do not interfere, Kyber,"
rasped Malaghurst.
"This is for the War Master."
The Justeran levelled their weapons. Kyber raised a plasma blaster. A shrill whine cut the air as the charge reached a peak. Lyak could see the shackled rage that burned at the core of Kyber's soul. It was a crimson cloak, rippling as it dragged behind him. He was afraid, Lyak realized. Not in the way that mortals were, but in the way that even the strongest fortress could be shaken if the ground beneath it cracked. Good, he thought. The seeds begin to bloom.
"You dare threaten,"
began Malaghurst.
"I protect the War Master,"
boomed Kyber.
"Who are you serving, brother? What words have they whispered to you? What lies have they paid you with?"
Malaghurst's face pulled taut over his skull. His crooked hand shifted on his staff of authority. Control radiated from the small movement. Lyak found himself thinking that of the two, the hulking warrior in black and the hunched equerry, he knew who was the more dangerous. "Peace." The word was low but fell like the blow of a hammer. Kyber's gaze jerked up. The aim of the Justeran faltered. "We are brothers," said Lorgar. "We are warriors in one cause and of one mind. Noble Falcus, there is no danger here for you to protect your lord from. Your devotion does the War Master honor." Lorgar stepped towards the Justeran commander. Kyber's plasma blaster lowered. The Primarch looked down at the Terminator. "I only wished to see my War Master before I departed. Malaghurst has broken no vow, and I will not ask you to break your oath of protection. Let there be no division here." Lyak could feel the force of the words. It was not like the power of sorcery or the manipulation of a trickster. It was as if the universe reformed around them, as though they were truth and creation. Lorgar looked around at the Justeran. His serene gaze touched them, and their guns lowered, just as their masters had. "Would that all the warriors of the War Master were as you are. You humble us all." He bowed his head briefly. And then, incredibly, the black-armored Terminators knelt. Malaghurst and Kyber had not moved, but Lorgar turned to them. "I came to serve the War Master's will. To help. I would ask how I can do that. But I feel I know what best can be done. Horus called for us to gather at Ullinor. It shall be as he commanded, but there are those who will not answer the call. Curs, in his pit of bones and self-pity. Angron, elevated by the gods, hears nothing besides the call of sacred slaughter. And Fulgrim? Where is he now? Malachurst gripped his staff as though steadying himself. He sucked a breath. Ragged shadows billowed and frayed around him.
Messages and emissaries have been sent.
Words that cannot be heard, said Lorgar lightly. Messages that will go unheeded. If you want my lost brothers to answer, then you must send the others to bring them back. You must send Primarchs to treat with Primarchs. Malachurst was silent for a second, and then nodded. Lorgar gave a brief smile and continued. Perturabo. He will obey.
I have already sent an emissary to him, said Malachurst.
Then contact that emissary. You have the means, I know.
And send him where? He and Fulgrim...
No, not Fulgrim, said Lorgar. Angron. Only iron can shackle my exalted brother now.
Curse?
Is Alfarius still paying you the courtesy of taking commands? Malachurst shook his head.
He is being put to other use.
Then perhaps Conrad is beyond reach, or hope already. I have long feared that inevitability.
I have sent emissaries to his last known location,
said Malachurst. No one you care for, I hope, said Lorgar. Malachurst gave a hunch-shouldered shrug.
And what of Fulgrim?
Asked the equerry.
Even his own legion has not seen him since he went into the rift beyond Cadia.
The Eye of Terror. That is what Perturabo calls it. The realm of the gods and their angels, and only the shriven do not fear to tread there. Lorgar paused and brought his open palm to his chest. The polished steel and crimson lacquer of his gauntlet gleamed in the scraps of light. I shall find Fulgrim and bring him to Ullinor. You have my oath. Malachurst, for the first time since Lorgar had come aboard, bowed his head.
You have my thanks, Lord Aurelian, for your knowledge, wisdom, and loyalty.
Lorgar's face remained unmoving. It is all that I can give. Guard our war master. We shall meet again at Ullinor. Then he turned from the still closed doors of the throne room and walked away. Around him, the kneeling Justerin stood. Lyak was still a moment longer, holding Kyber and Malachurst steady in his sight. Falk.
Deliver your message, emissary, said Perturabo, as Falk entered the oculum.
The dawn light was cutting across the mountaintops beyond the crystal windows of the summit fastness. This was the highest point of the fortress the Legion had gouged into the Onyx Mountain. Brushed adamantine girders held together a dome of meter-thick crystal panels. The floor was the stone of the mountain, sliced through and ground down to a mirror finish. Light shone through the dome and reflected off the grey floor in multicoloured beams. Falk had never been here, but knew that it had been designed by the Lord of Iron himself. Its reality surprised him. It was sublime. Even the oily crackle of void shields and the smoke rising from the burning mountain flanks seemed transmuted into something that felt divine, as though to stand here were to look down on reality, like one of the false gods of ancient legend. The oculum's maker seemed out of place in its splendour, a blunt intrusion of metal and menace into serenity. The arming mechanisms of his weapons clicked and cycled like twitching muscles, power arced up and down focusing coils. Argonis the Unscarred, emissary of the War Master, turned towards them. His head was bare,
his sharp features clean and unmarked. A crimson cloak hung over the right shoulder of his black and green armour. He held his red-plumed helm under his left arm, and his right held an ebony staff topped with the eye of Horus, wrought in gold. The blood topaz at its centre gleamed like a hot coal. Argonus's dark eyes met Perturabo's gaze and held it, unblinking.
"I speak the War Master's will," he said, his voice level. "This is not a message. I bring a command that you will heed."
Perturabo was silent for a long moment. When he spoke, his voice was a low rasp of control.
"Speak," he said.
Argonus's eyes flicked to Volk, then back to the Primarch.
"Horus, Saviour and Master of Mankind, commands you, Perturabo, Lord of the Fourth Legion, to seek your brother Angron and by any means bring him and his legion to muster on Ulanor. This must be done with all haste by his authority, using all methods and abstaining from no cost."
Argonus clamped his helm to his belt, reached beneath his cloak and removed a black glass scroll cylinder, its ends capped with silver. He held it out.
"Accept the writ of Horus's will from my hand."
"Master of Mankind," said Perturabo carefully. "War Master. Lupercal. Brother. Those titles that once were enough. What of the things that drove us to war, emissary? What of the use that we were put to by our faithless father? What of the broken bonds and betrayals?"
Volk held perfectly still. His skin was prickling inside his armour. Perturabo was a statue, every part of his great form motionless and silent, save his shrunken lips moving beneath his black gaze.
"I read the tides of battle for sector upon sector, and I read of warriors of iron fighting as their weapons fail for want of bullets, of my sons dragged down in the mire of Gilliman's advance. I look out on the realm we are fighting for, and I see only ashes. And now we are come to this. Commands for us to bleed on further, wrapped in full form and formality, given by beggars to lords."
"Do you refuse this command?"
asked Argonus, still offering the scroll cylinder.
"Do I refuse?" said Perturabo,
and his voice was a roll of thunder in the bright air.
"My legion bleeds. We bleed for our oaths and loyalty. On 100 worlds we bleed and do not break. Do I refuse?" "My answer is written in the blood of the dead, in the iron of their veins poured into the mud as we do the will of the War Master. Do I refuse? No, emissary. But I feel the weight of the butcher's bill you hand to me."
Perturabo took the scroll case, opened it, and read the parchment with a glance.
"Foryx,"
he said softly, his eyes fixed on the words inked on the scroll in his hand.
"Prepare messages to Kroger at Yannick and Toromino on Cassus. Volbron is to assume command here. All theatres begin the siphon and transport of forces through Beta Garmon to muster at Ulanor. No sudden withdrawal. They must give no ground. Those who must remain will make Gilliman's byblows pay. This order is to be cascaded without flaw. Order the Ironblood and the Grand Fleet into close orbit and prepare the first Grand Company for full embarkation and translation out of this system within 24 hours under my command."
"Yes, Lord,"
said Foryx without pause.
The defences here and across all of the theatres, from here to the Sulnan Gap, will degrade by 45% at least. We will take heavy casualties, both to hold the line and to run the blockades on the warp nodes. The effective strength that we can transport to Ulanor will be...
I know, Perturabo said, and he turned his head from the order parchment to look at the first captain. Give the orders. Forex moved away. Volk remained still, stunned.
Speak your question, Commander, said Perturabo without looking at Volk.
What you have just ordered will lose worlds that we have fought to take and bled to hold. The War Master must know that. He must know that to draw strength from this front will see it fail.
That is because it does not matter. Our enemies grow stronger and we grow weaker. This is a last thrust of the spear by my brother. He is a general who stands before the broken wall of a fortress with victory within his reach. But at his back, he sees horsemen on the hills. He must take the fortress now. If he succeeds, he has victory. Everything else is irrelevant.
Is that not so, emissary?
Argonis did not answer, but turned without bowing and moved to look at the view down the mountainside beneath them. The light played over his armor, haloing him for a second in the crimson of the dawn sun.
I will accompany you on your mission for the War Master, he said. It is his will.
Perturabo's gun cycled, but he did not reply.
Why you, Lord? Asked Volk. Why does this task fall to you?
Perturabo turned and walked across the stone mirror of the floor, his footsteps, gunshots in the quiet.
Because he knew I would obey, he said.